Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The Menominee Indian Nation of Wisconsin is in an uphill battle against a proposed mine in Michigan. The Back 40 project is not on reservation land, but it is an area culturally relevant and spiritually significant to the tribe. In Arizona, members of the San Carlos Apache tribe oppose a copper mine in the Oak Flat area of the Tonto National Forest. In the next hour, we'll hear about both of these struggles over mining. Stay with us. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As severe winter weather continues to impact northwest Montana, the Blackfeet Nation has issued an emergency declaration. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
Blackfeet Tribal Business Council Chairman Harry Barnes issued the emergency declaration Monday after more than 4 feet of snow buried some parts of the reservation. Barnes says the tribe is working with all entities to provide responder and public safety. He urged people to shelter in place and stay off roads and highways. The emergency declaration kicks the tribe's emergency operation plan into effect, which provides for first responder, snow removal and plowing, and communication with the public until the council lifts the declaration. The storm caused the Montana Department of Transportation to close Highway 2, a main travel artery west of the Blackfeet Reservation, on Monday. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
A South Dakota Senate committee is bringing a lobbying bill to the full Senate. The bill allows tribal elected officials the opportunity to speak in meetings without having to register as lobbyists. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
State Tribal Relations Secretary Steve Emery says elected officials from communities across South Dakota do not have to register as lobbyists. A mayor or council member from any town or city may address committees on bills as they choose. Emery says that makes it easier for those leaders to comment on bills that would help or hurt their interests.
As the law stands, elected leaders from South Dakota tribes are not given the same affordance to testify before legislative committees. Rather, elected leaders of tribes are required to register as a private lobbyist in order to present to a legislative committee. Senate Bill 74 was drafted to address what we see as an oversight and give the elected leaders of tribes in South Dakota the ability to appear before the legislature to present local issues facing state citizens within their constitution.
Senate Bill 74 passed the committee unanimously. It now moves to the full South Dakota Senate. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Mole Lake Sacaugan Chippewa Tribe and a renewable energy developer have finished up a project in the community after nearly a year and a half of work. Leaders of the Wisconsin tribe hope it will lower energy costs. WXPR's Miranda Vanderleest has more.
Tribal leaders paired up with SunVest to secure a couple million dollars in grants from the U.S. Energy Department and the Housing and Urban Development Department. Vice President of Operations Adam Gussie says panels have been installed on 50 homes and 19 businesses, and he says Mole Lake will be the only community in the state to have solar panels at this capacity.
It varies by house depending on their usage, but the average is 85%, and it's on 50% of the homes that the tribe owns. For the commercial businesses, they have now solar arrays on 19 of their commercial facilities. There's only one or two commercial buildings that they own and operate that don't have solar on them. And that percentage is closer to about 25% because they use so much more power.
Gussie says most of the state has less than 1% of its generation coming from solar energy. Jeff Ackley Jr. is the tribal administrator and says it's a step in the right direction.
This is the largest per capita solar install in the Midwest, which is pretty cool that our Sacaugan Chippewa community could be put on a map for that. Even though that we're a small community, we also try to plan ahead for a future down the road for our kids and our future generations that are going to be coming after us.
Ackley says the solar panels will save them about $100,000 a year. For National Native News in Northern Wisconsin, I'm Miranda Vanderleest.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Do you feel President Donald Trump's priorities are clear when it comes to the environment? Well, let's take a look. He shared numerous times that oil and gas and other extractive industries are being crippled by regulation. During his campaign, he pledged to boost the struggling coal industry, and last week he made moves to try and fast-track approval on a couple of oil pipelines. Also, Trump's pick to run the Environmental Protection Agency has either filed or joined 13 lawsuits against the EPA, many of which are a pushback on regulations for air and water quality and emissions. What do you think about this snapshot? What does it mean for those battling against natural resource development? And what does it mean for those who want to develop more? Today, you'll get a chance to tell us what you think. And in the next hour, we're going to focus on how Native people feel about this. We're using the stories of two proposed mines on land that some tribes say is sacred. And we're going to examine the issues. And first, we'll learn about a proposed copper mine in Arizona that could take 10 years to build, 40 years to operate, and 10 to 15 years to clean up. And it's all on the land that members from the San Carlos Apache say is culturally significant and sacred. Also, in today's discussion, we'll learn about a mine in Michigan that a Wisconsin tribe says will harm an area that is in their origin story. And once you get the details, or if you're connected to these places, we want to hear from you. What are your concerns? What are your celebrations? We also want to hear from folks who have a mine in their own tribal backyard. How do you feel about it? Give us a call at 1-800-99-NATIVE and share your thoughts. All opinions are definitely welcome. Also, what about the promise of jobs that comes with mines? What would you like others to hear about this? Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is also the number to share your voice, and we do look forward to your calls. And joining us now from Scottsdale Community College in Arizona, we have Winsler Nosey, senior, and he is speaking to Manny Pino's American Indian Law class, who also happens to be tuned in to the broadcast. So a special hello to those students today. And Winsler is the director of the Gombeke Gojo with the Apache Stronghold. And he is also a former chairman and councilman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. It's our pleasure to welcome him back. Winsler, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on your show again.
And Winsler, it's also exciting to hear that you are also connected to students and bringing this issue to the classroom. And can't wait to get feedback on the dialogue you have with them once you wrap up this interview. And so, Winsler, let's start a little bit about the area for the proposed mine and the significance it has to the people, your nation. Go ahead. Tell us more.
Well, I guess we could probably start with the significance of the Oak Flat area. You know, it simply comes right down to that it's our identity, and it's what makes us who we are, the characteristics that we have, because all of that is based on the religion. And for us, for the beginning of time, when time started, is when the Creator touched this place. And as I try to explain to a lot of non-Indians about what it means, is no different than Mount Sinai, where these gifts were given and the people began to follow these gifts in what is called religion today. And this place for us is no different. And this is where the proposed mining with Resolution Copper from Rio Tinto has got an exemption from the laws to give them this land so that they can do this mining. And but what people are now beginning to realize that it does not only affect Native people, but it affects as well as all the people here in Arizona and as well as people across this country. And so it's a really huge issue that has now come to the forefront.
And so give us a mental image. You know, what does it look like?
You know, I mean, it's really indescribable. You have to be here. And the way the rocks formation, you know, there's a lot of historical history that goes into the formation of the way the earth was made and why it was made that way, about the spiritual life, the spiritual beings. And in the terrain that it sets, you know, has the beauty, but not only the beauty, but it has all the municipal plants. It has an abundance of food, and most importantly, the water that it holds, and the uniqueness of the area being holy. And so, like when I tell people, is that this is one place that you could actually be born here and live out the rest of your life. And in Apache, you know, that's our female, because it provides all this abundance for life. And this is why, another reason why it's so unique. And this is the place, Oak Flats.
And Winslow, the story of the fight to save it has a couple of twists and turns. Tell us a little bit about some of those twists and turns.
Well, you know, it really goes back to what's really disturbing. It goes back to how Arizona was founded and the pioneers and how Arizona was formed. Well, you have all those documentations in the university as well as with the military and as well as with, you know, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And then even in the local towns that, you know, have their history as far as when they were founded. And it's all embedded in there of how this place had already been very significant meaning to our people. But when copper and gold and silver, you know, was founded, the reservation that was first established, it was included in that. But when all this was founded, then by executive orders, parcels of lands were cut away. And this was one that was cut away and from the reservation, the first reservation the United States had made. But in the meantime, the dependency was on the Bureau of Indian Affairs, where our people were told that these places will be kept, you know. And the way it was passed down to us was that until you become civilized, you know, you become an American, you know, you'll be able to, again, be afforded to come back to these places. But that was untrue. So a lot of our people back then depended and relied on those who held us captive. And as time went by, you know, and seeing what we see today and how the land was given away through an exemption, you know, really defeats what was said to our people prior. And so it does take a lot of twists and turns, because now we in one part, we're forced to follow the federal guidelines, the United States policies. And yet, you know, they're not upholding that promise, which is the trust responsibility that they have with tribes. And so there has been many turns here and there, but what really blows me away is that all this is already documented. And as far as the uniqueness, where this place was holy, and you can still see where the people had lived, the petroglyphs, and then even the history of where over 75 of our Apache people jumped to their death to not be taken to San Carlos as prisoners of war. So all that is there, and it just shows, you know, how as Americans and Native Americans, we have to pay attention to what's happening.
And so, folks, if you've been paying attention to the movement in Oak Flat, the push against a mine, is there anything you'd like to share as we take a look at this? Maybe it's a part of your own tribal story, the place that Winslow is describing. If there's any thoughts, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And part of some of those twists and turns include approval for this land going into other hands as a part of the National Defense Authorization Act. Also, you know, taking a look at another twist of it being designated on the National Register of Historic Places. There's a little bit of back and forth. And also a part of this is a land exchange. Winsler, can you explain a little bit about what that is and how you feel about it?
Well, you know, you got to, for the people to understand what had taken place was that the plan of operation was never exposed to anyone, not to the tribe, not to the surrounding towns. So no one never knew what the plan was about what Resolution Copper was going to do with this place. In the meantime, as far as what land they were exchanging, you know, does not compare to the Oak Flat. I mean, every area has its uniqueness, but where Oak Flat is holds an abundance of life that can live on and on and on. And so not only that, you know, what they're going after, the resources of what's underneath, again, is far different from the land that they were exchanging with the government. But the problem there was because they were exempt from all federal laws and they were exempt from the process, then what happened not only to the Apaches and Native Americans, but Arizona itself, they never seen the comparison of what was being given up to this foreign company. And so that's one of the biggest dilemma, what was stolen, you know, basically what was stolen and what was given to them. And then we have, you know, John McCain and Paul Gosar and Ann Kirkpatrick and Mr. Flake. Well, you come back to with Paul Gosar, not supporting, you know, for it to be one of the places of historical places. And the things that they've said about this place is really disturbing because it just tells me that the naive and what's really behind this process is at the forefront and not for the people in general or either the people of Arizona. And it really changes the future and sets precedents if this is allowed to go forward. So there has been a lot of twisting and turning, but you know the bigger part of the whole thing that I've been really pleased with is the educational process. Even though it's not happening quickly as we wish, but the thing that's important is all people are becoming aware of when Congress makes exemptions or how political powers play in preventing something good from happening.
All right. Thank you for that, Winsler. And folks, our phone lines are open. Join us at 1-800-996-2848. I also want to let folks know we did invite Resolution Copper to be a guest on the show today. They didn't return our request for an interview by the beginning of today's broadcast. But if somebody is available to join us right now, we're live. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And Winsler, when we're talking about different areas of land, do you know or have you heard or is there any talk about if there is a land swap or when the land swap happens, will Apache people be allowed to go on it?
On the land that has been swapped, it goes back to the plan of operation, you know, that the transfer and then all the information that's entailed into that, no one knows what it is. And, you know, just like anything else, they come out bits and pieces. But at this point, you know, we don't know. And then you have to also look at ancestral homelands, you know, because that also involves other tribes, and they may have been in that area of that land that they have, that's a part of this deal. And so because we have a sense of idea and know where it's at, but as far as who's all connected and how the U.S. Forest Service can work that out, we don't have any details on that.
And so, Winsler, there's a documentary that came out last Friday on Viceland Cable Network, a program called Rise, titled The Apache Stronghold. And it featured your granddaughter, a moment where I think a lot of eyes were on this issue and people were able to learn some of this when all of you went to Congress or to the halls of Congress and were presenting on this issue and how it affected. And there was a part where Nylin sat there, testified, and her words were, "Who are we without these sacred places?" And I think that's an important question to ask, especially when we talk about swapping land. Native people are connected to certain areas because that's where they're connected. Any thoughts on that and her words or her critical question of who are we without these sacred places? Go ahead, Winsler.
Well, you know, her words, you know, as a parent, I don't think you have to be a Native American, but as a parent and a grandparent, it's chilling what she's saying because it's coming from the eyes and the heart of a younger person. And what she's making reference to was that, you know, there's many religions, and many of those religions, you know, started from back in the European countries. And so if there's any doubters here in America, they go back to the country and they touch these holy places and they come back and they reaffirm themselves and then they really begin the preaching and really saving other people with the religion. So for us, it's here. You know, and as I was saying earlier, it's no different than Mount Sinai and where all the teaching from the mounds are brought to the people. And the reason of why we are to be in harmony with all what is created on the mother. And all these special gifts come to a certain place. And so when it's resonated in the religion and the ceremony and the songs and what you say in the preaching to your people, it's there. They can go and touch and they can go and feel. They can go and take their children, just like my mother did to me. And so what hurts me is that from the time my mother and her age of people were born as prisoners of war, their families, their parents were exiled out of these areas. And now being able to finally come back and tie the two together, and then now with Nalin and the generation at her age will now not have that opportunity because, as it's described, it's going to be a big pit, a big hole, and they're going to be rerouting everyone. And with any mining land, you're not permitted. You're trespassing. So all that's going to be closed, and it's going to be gone. So how does she tell her children, her grandchildren? And that's what she was referring to, which is really chilling. And that's why I was saying that anybody with religious belief, you know, would have to stand up and say, no, this is not right. You know, we can't afford this because that's destroying a religion. And supposedly America was founded on that, freedom of religion. Why so many people come here, but yet the one for us, and like many other places, are being destroyed. And that's what we fear about the future, because now there will only be words. There will only be stories, because how did they cross-reference that? And that's what she was getting across to Congress.
And, you know, there is a lot of connections. I think a lot of people related to the Oak Flat movement across different nations. People showed up to show their solidarity, people in Congress. And so, folks, we're picking your brain today, reminding you of an issue that maybe you started hearing about or seeing more headlines in 2014. Things sped up in 2015. And last year, we heard Oak Flat again. Folks, if there's anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848. What do you think about what Winsler has shared with us? 1-800-99-NATIVE. And maybe you are also taking a look at a mine that's connected to your tribal community in some form. Give us your thoughts on it. 1-800-996-2848. And Winsler, again, we did invite Resolution Copper to be a part of this conversation. I'm also wondering, have you ever had a chance to talk directly with them or have conversations with key people to talk about this, to share your concerns and maybe even talking about compromise? Go ahead, Winsler.
Well, first of all, when I was a tribal leader for the years, when this issue came about, one of the things that people need to be educated on is that the United States government has a trust responsibility with the San Carlos Apache tribe. And so when this issue began, the position to the San Carlos Apache tribe was that we were asking Congress to make sure that the administrative process, the law that governs NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy, that it be enacted and be enforced, and that we also had informed the United States that we needed to get our voice to the table, because at this point there has been no consultation, and we heard that all these developments were taking place without the involvement of the tribe. And so if you look back to those days, at that time, Resolution Copper, you know, made its efforts around 10 to 11 times trying to go through Congress to get this land exchange with exemptions. But because of the education and talking to Congress about how important this place was and how, you know, it was important on behalf of the United States that we all know what's going to happen to this place, and that, you know, the position of the tribe was no mine, you know, because this is our holy and sacred place. And so so that was the position that we had taken, and the United States has that responsibility. They have the responsibility to speak in the best interest of the tribe as they negotiate with Resolution Copper. Now, when they tell us to talk directly to Resolution Copper, that's going against what has been the law, you know, and the relationship between us and the United States. And, you know, you have to figure that one out, because, you know, there's so many things. One of the things that American people need to realize that there's so many things happening in this country financially and obligations to other countries, you know, and then you have political favors that go on and political campaign money that goes to candidates. And, you know, and you go back and you research it and you find, you know, how this company was financing the candidates. And so that gives you the reason why, you know, they were trying to force the responsibility to Resolution Copper, and then for them to sweeten the pie for the tribe and, you know, give the tribe, I guess, you know, what they say we need at over 60% unemployment. And so that kind of just blew us away, because that's the responsibility of the United States, you know, to make sure. And but not only for us, but for the surrounding towns and the state of Arizona and the well-being of this country, because 75% of that, I believe it's still the same, is leaving this country. And so, you know, that was really discouraging. And the two times we met with Ann Kirkpatrick and also Paul Gosar, they had promised that they would get the tribe's voice at the table. And, you know, and little did we know that wasn't the plan, that they were already being supported by Resolution Copper.
And so Winsler, hang tight, because we got to go to break here. And you also mentioned jobs. I want to go ahead and touch on that after the break. Folks, again, if you want to join us, we're talking Oak Flat, 1-800-996-2848. We're also talking mining. What do you think? Join us. Our phone lines are open. Last year, over time, thousands of people, both Native and non-Native, from many walks of life, have made their way to prayer camps in North Dakota to stand against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Much support and donations also poured in. Join us for the next Native America Calling, where we'll talk about these camps and what they've meant. We hope you'll join us.
program support by the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps provides you with a network and support to make improving the lives of others possible. Volunteer in one of more than 60 countries around the world and build relationships, share your unique heritage, and work side by side with the community to solve challenges in education, health, agriculture, business, or the environment. Use your skills and talents to change lives, including your own. Info at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for tuning in today. Whether you're listening to the show live on the radio, streaming on the internet, or taking in the discussion after the live broadcast as a podcast, we want to hear from you. Send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Drop us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE, or if you're listening live, call in to our toll-free number, 1-800-996-2848. And you can also leave a message on our toll-free line if you're picking us up after hours. Leave us a message. We are talking about mines today. Historians believe that the Egyptians mined gold at least 4,000 years ago. Many things we use in our daily basis are mined. From copper in our pipes to earth minerals found in your iPhone, mining can bring about useful tools. It can also cause environmental damage. And today, we're taking it to the basic elements of what's being mined and tying it to our tribal nations. We're discussing two proposed mines connected to what Native people say are sacred to their tribe. And we're also looking for your calls. What do you think about mines? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We are taking a look at Oak Flat to start things off. I do want to let folks know that we did invite Resolution Copper to be a part of this discussion today. They didn't return a request for an interview, but we do have open phone lines if anybody would like to join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also joining us from Scottsdale Community College in Arizona is Winsler Nosey, Sr., and he is with us. He is the director of the Gan Bikay Gojo with the Apache Stronghold. And he is also a former chairman and councilman of the San Carlos Apache Tribe. And he's also speaking today at a classroom in Arizona, Manny Pino's American Indian Law class. Hello to the class again, too. And Winsler, before the break, we were picking up on jobs. A lot of times we hear the argument when it comes to development, when you said it earlier about mines and jobs. Your thoughts when you hear that this mine is going to create jobs?
Okay, well, I guess first I just want to say that, you know, John McCain attacked at us. If you've seen the documentary on Rise, they talk about the unemployment rate. You know, it's kind of funny that when the United States put all Native Americans as prisoners of war, the unemployment was 100%. And then all they had given us was federal dollars for the basic needs. But anything else beyond that, the tribe created its own revenue. And I'm really proud of my tribe to see that our tribal government has been really consistent in bringing down the unemployment. And yet, if the United States would fulfill the responsibility, then we won't have that high employment. And it's just really discouraging when they mislead the people out there. And then when you come to the surrounding mining and history, you know, there was a part of the one mine near the Winkman area that had told the tribe way back when, you know, about the mining and that they would hire tribal members. And the way the history is written on that is that they did. But then a month after that, the majority of the Apaches were fired and let go. And then if you look at the surrounding minings, you know, how many of our tribal members are actually working there? If that was true to where mining really provided employment, then the people, you know, the high employment numbers would be down. Well, with Resolution Copper, you know, let's remember that this is one of the things that they threw out there to everyone, not just to the tribe, about the number of jobs that are going to come. But yet, if you look at the whole thing and you look at their plans, it's robotics. Everything is robotics. And as far as they're going to go underneath to obtain the copper, no human beings can go that far. And, you know, so the numbers are not consistent. And that's why, as long as you're exempt from federal law and the policy and all the requirements, then you're going to put up numbers that are not realistic. And, you know, so it just blows me away, you know, and if these are temporary jobs. This is not going to be a jobs forever. And that's why it's so important, like in our region, that we push an economy that will be jobs there forever and taking care of what's important. And one is going to be water. One has always been water. And that's a devastating thing, too, with the number of gallons that the water that mine requires. We look at the life span in this area even shorter because it's tampering with aquifer and deep water. And those are the things why people in Arizona don't hear, because they're exempt from the law. They're not required to push these things out publicly. They can give you false numbers, and that's what they've been doing.
And Winsler, earlier you mentioned NEPA. Is there anything you'd like to add about the environmental impact statement connected to Oak Flat and decisions?
Well, you know, the important thing is the process. You know, NEPA is a very important process that has to be done, because it requires a corporation to submit the plan of operation. And if that's not done, then no one knows. And as far as being exempt right now, you know, they're not required to do that. And this is why, you know, Oak Flats and what we've been doing for this number of years and the gathering that we're going to have, the third annual coming up, is to really educate all people across the board and reach, you know, reach people so that they can reach the senators and House of Representatives so that they can make a conscious decision, because, you know, the repeal, any kind of repeal can still happen. And that's what we're asking, where our blessings would be, because that's the only long shot that we have. But, you know, when you're an underdog and we've been all these years, you know, it just gives you more fire to get things done. And when you're right, you know, we're right in what we're doing. So everybody that becomes a part of this issue is saving what's left. And that's what we got to do.
And take into consideration this administration, any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, one of the things in New York, in North Carolina, and places I've been telling the huge groups there that what you need to understand is that when you look back, do a chronology, you're going to find toxic waste, you're going to find air pollution, you're going to find all those back in the 50s and 60s that were rising to a point where these laws like NEPA came into place. And so almost every president, you know, really had to stand by what changes were occurring from what we were doing. So the laws either stayed or got a little stricter. But now we have Trump who's talking about diluting these laws. And I just hope people remember those days that when cities were, the air pollutions were high, you know, the rivers were toxic, you know, and when NEPA and these laws came into play, it pushed them to clean up. It pushed the United States to monitor what corporations were doing. So, you know, for me, that's one thing that America needs to understand when it comes to Trump about talking about diluting these laws, because it really goes back to corporations and what they've done to the cycle of life. And that's one thing that we better pay attention to.
All right. Thank you for that. Winsler Noisy Sr., thank you for joining us. We do look forward to hearing how your class thought about today's discussion and any feedback you have for us. We wish you well and look forward to talking with you down the road. Folks, we want you to join this conversation, too. After hearing all of that, what's your reaction? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And again, if there is a mine that is in your community's either cultural space or close to your community, how do you feel about it? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to hear about another project that is raising eyebrows. We're going to go now to Kashina, Wisconsin, to hear from Gary Besaw. He is a member of the Menominee Tribal Legislature and chairman of the tribe's Environmental Task Force. He's also a former chairman of the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin. Gary, welcome to the hour.
Well, Lennon, Tara, for having me on. Greetings to all my relatives out there. My real name. I'm supposed to say what my real name is, not the one I pay my taxes with. And my clan. I'm of the bear clan. I'm told we should say that when we start to ground ourselves so people can know our perspective.
Definitely.
So that's me, and thank you for having me on.
Yes, Gary. We were given these words. Why not use them? Thank you for that. Connecting us to your nation in this way, too. And Gary, you're here today to talk to us a little bit about a mine that is something on your mind. The Back 40 Project is in Michigan. Tell us about this area and how it is significant to the Menominee in Wisconsin.
Okay, well, the Menominee are the oldest continuous residents of Wisconsin, what they call Wisconsin now. We call it Wisconsin. That means a good place to live. So it's been bastardized into what they say Wisconsin now. But that come from our language. We once occupied over 10, 12 million acres of land in the central and midwestern Wisconsin, part of Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We actually went into Chicago and in the north up into Minnesota. We had large land holdings. We called ourselves Kiosmachituk. That means ancient ones or ancient movers. We used to move from camp to camp, from hunting camp to fishing camp to summer camp to growing garden camps, all over depending on what it was. And we were called by the Algonquin. We are Algonquin, but the other tribes that come through, they called us Omatnamanewuk. That means wild rice people, because our diet used to consist a lot of wild rice. All through this area is all wild rice thing. Wherever we went, they said wherever Menominee went, the rice followed. And when we left, the rice went away. They called us the wild rice people. Well, through the treaty era, we, in an 1836 treaty, we had ceded some of the territory or our territory in Upper Michigan because we had been up in that area, but we ceded that to the U.S. government. And the river that goes between Upper Michigan and Wisconsin is called the Menominee River. Wouldn't you know it? You know, it's called the Menominee River, and it separates Upper Michigan from Wisconsin. At the mouth of the Menominee River, you see, that's where our old people tell us, that's where our creation story comes from. We're told a great bear, and he's one of those spirits from under the ground. He come up, and that's why the great spirit turned him into the first human, the first Menominee. He come out of the water right at the mouth of the Menominee River. And as he walked around, why, great spirit saw him there, the first Menominee, and had pity on him. He looked lonely. So he allowed other beings, as he come upon him, to also be turned into Menominee. And that's how our first members came.
Gary, this is a very important story, and I can only imagine how many times it's told or how deeply woven it is, these words about the origin of your people. And Gary, a lot of times when we hear these we kind of heard it a little bit too from Winsler earlier talking about Oak Flat, these places are significant to Native people, but because they lie outside of reservation territory, we get into situations like this. And Gary, does it frustrate you that, land that you know, that you've been taught or that it's been given through time, that, you know, places that are significant, and, you know, it doesn't rest within reservation land. And so then there's a challenge if you even have the ability to put claim on it or ties to it. Does that frustrate you, Gary?
Well, yes. And actually, in 1956, we had some University of Michigan archaeologists, and through times we've had archaeologists and others going through that area. And they've looked at some of our claims. They've looked at some of the burial mounds, some of the grave sites. They've looked at some of the raised agricultural beds. They've looked at all of this. And with some of that, through NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, we've actually put in a claim now for some of those that are housed. Some of our relatives, the skeletons that are housed in the University of Michigan. So we're in the process of reclaiming those so we can get them off shelves and put them where they need to be, do it the right way. So we know these are ours. These are all prehistoric, and all of our stories are matching up. People are saying, well, yeah, I guess you guys are right. What's interesting is we have been told by historians and archaeologists, well, you know, Native Americans weren't sophisticated enough to have agriculture at this latitude. Yeah, it's too far north. It's too high. They never could do it. Well, they found miles of raised agricultural beds of gardening that we told them we did, and now they have proof. And a lot of this falls right within that mining footprint and will be destroyed.
A main reason why you're fighting that. Gary, go ahead, finish.
Well, we know we have not just those garden beds that we're concerned with, but there are burial mounds, and there are graves, and there are village sites, and there are ceremonial dance rings. We have many things around there that fall within the mine footprint or right adjacent to it, and we know they're going to be harmed. We know they would. And the last thing we're told as natives is that we could be allowed to go harm somebody's ancestors buried somewhere. You never do that. You don't do that.
And Gary, I think this also kind of goes back to that young woman's words that I quoted earlier of what happens when we don't have these spaces to go to connect, to remember who we are as Native people. Folks, I know you can comment on that one. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And what brings all of this up is talking about mining. Gary, you are connecting us to the Back 40 mine. You know, I want to hear a little bit. We had a chance to speak with one of the folks involved when it comes to mining. We spoke with Clifford Nelson Jr., who's the vice president of U.S. operations at Aquila Resources, Inc., which is the company behind the Back 40 project. Let's hear some of his words. We asked him if the company met with the Menominee Indian Nation of Wisconsin.
Aquila has met with the tribe on several occasions, and we are open to additional conversation. We would like to have a continuing dialogue with the Menominee Nation to discuss their concerns and come to resolutions that we can work together. We are fully aware of the cultural sites around our property. We hired archaeological teams to come in and locate them. And what we've done is we have mapped them out, and we have designed our mine plan and our construction plan and operations to stay completely away from them and preserve them. And we would love to meet with the Menominee to discuss their preservation and how we should do so.
You mentioned cultural sites. Are there burial mounds on the property?
There's burial mounds and some pottery sites and some raised garden beds on our property. But the Mine does not come in contact with those at all. We are staying completely away from them.
About how close are they?
I would have to look at the map to be certain, but I would say about probably 500 yards or more.
And we also spoke with Clifford about the scope of the project and environmental concerns. We will put the full interview up on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And let's take it back to Gary. Any reactions?
Okay, you heard me almost trying to jump in there. I tell you, you know, first of all, they say this is a... In going through the mining permit in Michigan, they said this was a 7-year project and it's an open pit sulfide mine. And it would be of 7-year duration. In what they are putting out to investors, they are talking about a 16-year mine and an open pit and an underground mine. So these, what they're telling the investors on the Toronto Stock Exchange and what they are telling the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality in their application for a mine are two different things. So we know the reality. We know what's happening. That this easily is an open pit zinc, gold, silver sulfide mine. When exposed to air, you know that it makes, when exposed to air and water, there's a chemical reaction, makes sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid then drains from there. It's called acid mine drainage into nearby water resources, everything. And metallic sulfide mines have, everywhere, there's not been one mine that has not caused environmental damage and pollution. So we have this connection not only to the cultural sources there, and we know it's growing. They've even said they found. Remember, I should have mentioned this. Peeler Resources really is a development stage exploration company. They basically will explore and find, and then potentially sell to a larger mining company. So they continue to look. And they've found additional ore, and they're going to grow beyond this. This was just to get their permit through, we believe.
So your concerns are definitely high, Gary. And, you know, when it comes to this, something that is also unique, or not unique, something that's also worth mentioning is the Menominee Tribe from Wisconsin is challenging something that's going on in Michigan. And, you know, that also provides more layers to this. Gary, we were also able to ask Clifford about water that's going to be used. Got the response that it's going to be purer than rain coming out of the sky. They said that they will put the purified water into the river that's used in the mine. With that, Gary, let's tell folks, where does the project stand now?
Well, right now, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, this is what happened. Michigan is one of only two states, Michigan and New Jersey, that have an MOA, an agreement with the two respective states with their DNR to give them the Clean Water Act delegation. So they've given them the Clean Water Act 404 authority to the state. Now, when they did that, they gave them that ability then to permit mines, to go through that mine process, and they take care of the Clean Water Act in their state. Well, if they do that, what the federal government did not delegate also because they can't was the treaty responsibility and the trust responsibility. So Michigan is saying, well, we just have this Clean Water Act, we just have this delegation. So we are going to act on what authority we do have. We have nothing to do, really, with the treaty rights and the trust responsibility. And the feds are telling us, unless that action that Michigan is doing is a federal action, we can't step into this. So we see there's a disconnect in their responsibility from the federal government.
So a state line is also, you know, coming into play and creating complications. You know, there's more to learn about this mine project. There's more to learn about Oak Flats. But in the end, you know, we come to that question of how does this affect our Native nations? And what about what one Native nation is facing? Does it affect another, the way decisions are made? We're wondering that. We're going to close the hour with that question. And if you'd like to answer it, send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today. We look forward to hearing more on these issues. There are more mines across the U.S. that have concerns in Native nations, also mines that have celebrations in Native nations. If there is a mine you are connected to through your tribal roots, give us a shout out. Send us an email. Tell us more. We want to learn about how it's affecting your Native community. Our email again, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. I want to thank both of our guests today, Winsor Noisy Jr. or Senior, also Gary Besaw, and we look forward to hearing from them again in the future. We are back again tomorrow with a show about life at the North Dakota Access Pipeline prayer camps. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, our executive producer Art Hughes, senior producer Monica Brain, associate producer Andy Murphy. Also, thanks to Roman Garcia for engineering today's show. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. It has been a pleasure to spend another hour with you. We look forward to many more down the road. Thanks again. We're back tomorrow.
Buju, gida na damage jigikane dagwak, apitane dagwak, jimino ayamagak o de anishinabe kwe. Dange gwenane again, jiganoen dagwazien. Ganoj 1-800-318-2596, gema mawadishuen, healthcare.gov, gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes, including Native America Calling. Just pick, click, give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.